So we are in chapter 12 of Ecclesiastes, final chapter. Solomon has been poking us for months. And if you haven't been with us, Solomon pretty much says life is stupid. It's an enigma. It does not make sense. It's vanity of vanities. It's a vapor because he's looking at life under the sun from a naturalistic kind of he sprinkles God in there, but his philosophy is a godless world. And so by chapter 12, here's what's happened. He has punched himself out. He's just got exhausted. And then in chapter 12, at the end of it, he says, okay, here's what I actually want to say. You're like, it took you 12 and a half chapters to say it? Yep, took me 12 and a half hours. 12 and a half chapters to say it, yep. So it's a brilliant chapter. We're gonna blitz through it. And it's pretty simple. It's number one, it will never be easier than now. And he just goes through the aging process that's gonna happen to every person. Number two, the sources that you listen to really matter. Number three, no pain, no gain. And then finally, this is the end of the matter. This is what I really want to say the whole time I've been talking. So great chapter, let's jump in. Verse one, chapter 12, Ecclesiastes. Remember also your creator in the days of your youth before the evil days come and the years draw near of which you will say, I have no pleasure in them. Solomon kind of talking to, I think, like a grandpa to a grandson, and he's saying, son, listen, you're gonna get old. It's a poem, really, from here down to verse 8. It's a poem of aging. And he's saying to his grandson, listen, there's a day coming that you'll wake up in the morning and you're gonna be like, ah, I woke up. Ouch, I woke up. That's coming for every single one of us. And he's gonna go body part by body part, how the human body just begins to wear out and you can't fix it. I don't care about new hips and titanium. At some point, you can't fix it. It's kind of like my Volkswagen bus. I have a 66 Volkswagen bus. And the starter wouldn't work. So I pulled the starter out. I took it to a guy right down there. He's really good. So he rebuilt the starter. I put it back in and it still wouldn't start. So I took it back. I put it, took it back to him. He goes, ah, yeah. Volkswagen buses, the wires run from the back of it, from the battery up to the switch and then back. So I've got to put a weaker spring in there. It doesn't have enough voltage. There's a voltage drop. I'll put a weaker spring in there. It'll be fine. So I put a weaker spring in it, put it in. Still didn't start. Took it back to him. Oh, yeah. Here, try this. Go up, really clean off the fuse and everything. Get that really clean up there. Put a new fuse in it. Put this kind of fuse in it. It'll work. Didn't work. Went back to him. Okay, here's the thing. I have this relay system. Put this relay system on that, and then it'll work. Didn't work. Finally, he just says, you need a new vehicle. That's what you need. It's old. That's just the way it's going to be. So push it. All right, that's fine. All right. That's what happens to the human body. It doesn't matter. Weaker spring, the voltage is too low. You're not gonna fix it. It's the way it is. It happens to every single one of us. Many of us are reminded of aging every morning when we look in the mirror, like, yep, I'm getting old. And Solomon calls it evil days. Rah, literally. You know why? Because aging was never God's original plan. Genesis 1 and 2 is God's plan. Adam and Eve, the first couple, were to live in paradise, having babies, growing family, no disease, no death, in perfect communion with their heavenly Father. That's God's plan. But then chapter 3, rebellion against that plan, sin, the fall, and with the fall comes pain. Ouch, my knee hurts. Yep. So this is not what we're doing right now. The rest of this chapter is really because of the fall. This poem is, yeah, that wasn't God's plan. It's evil. And once evil got unleashed, it had in it this thing called aging and everything that goes with it. So now Solomon gets ready, body part by body part. Verse 2, before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are darkened, and the clouds return after the rain, in the day when the keepers of the house tremble, and the strong men are bent, and the grinders cease because they are few, and those who look through the windows are dimmed. Solomon now says, here's how you know you're getting old. You can't see anymore. It's always kind of cloudy, like cataracts. I'll be reading a book, and then I'll look up from reading a book, and it takes a few minutes for my eyes now to focus out. Like I have no depth perception for at least like 35, 45 seconds. Somebody could be running at me with an axe and I would not know it, because I can see about 18 inches and that's it. That's just what happens with eyesight. I have this Bible. I bought it in 1997. It's a Cambridge Cameo wide margin. So it has like an inch and a half all the way around the border of it. I bet I have 1,000 hours of tiny 0.5 millimeter writing in that Bible. And when I started writing it, my mom told me, don't write that small, you will not be able to read it. And I'm like, no way, these eyes will always be perfect. I can't read it now. I even try, it gives me a headache to even try to read how small that writing is. Thousands of hours. The knees start to just tremble. The shoulders get bent. The keepers of the house just bend over. It's like people at some point, they're like, I've been holding my shoulders up for 85 years. Forget it. I'm just slumping now. The grinders are few. Your teeth fall out. No more kettle corn. No more corn nuts. No more caramel apples because you'll leave a tooth in it. There'll be even fewer grinders if you try that. So Solomon just like, poetically, this is what happens. Verse 4. And the doors on the street are shut when the sound of the grinding is low. And one rises at the sound of a bird, and all the daughters of song are brought low. Your hearing goes. When you sleep, anything wakes you up. Just a little bird chirping, you're wide awake. But when you wake up, you can't hear anything. Like it's an enigma, right? Like falling asleep is not my problem. It's staying asleep that's the problem. I can fall asleep just about anywhere now, but I cannot stay asleep. I knew I had a problem when a couple years ago, for my birthday, my daughters bought me a MyPillow. And I was so excited. Like it was snowboards and motorcycles and tools and chainsaws. Now it's a MyPillow. I'm like, yeah, thank you. This is perfect. Can I try it right now? Like literally, can I try it right now? I'm tired. I knew, okay, things have changed for me. It's amazing to me. Like I'll fall asleep and then there'll be a dog barking in Medford. I'm like, what? Dog barking. And I know for 2 hours I'm gonna stare at the ceiling. Like, oh, I wish I could go back to sleep, but I can't. This is what Solomon's saying. And then the daughters of the song are brought low. You just can't hear the high notes anymore. So I used to listen to a lot of Neil Young kind of growing up, liked him. And PBS had this concert of Neil Young. So I tuned in for a while, I was listening to him. And he's got the harmonica and the guitar and, you know, looks disheveled like he always does. And he's singing songs that I was really familiar with and he could not hit the high notes anymore. And I'm like, man, he lost it. And then the camera panned out in the audience and it was all old people. Like, well, they can't hear it, so it doesn't even matter. Like it's a match made in heaven. They're like, yeah, he still got it, man. Neil Young still hitting those notes. Now you just can't hear him anymore. That's what it is. Verse 5. And they are afraid also of what is high, and terrors in the way, or literally terrors out on the road. The almond tree blossoms gray hair. The grasshopper drags itself along and desire fails. Solomon says, as you get older, you start to be afraid of everything. Just terrors outside. Like, oh no. Ah, Myron, don't jump off that. When you're 18, you have not seen enough life to be afraid of things. You haven't seen enough things go south, enough mistakes made that, But when you're 80, you've seen absolutely everything go south and you realize, ah, look out. Be careful. And then what happens is the world seems like it speeds up. But is the world actually speeding up? Probably not. What's actually happening? We're slowing down. So we're not driving in the fast lane anymore. We're now in the slow lane. And then eventually you're like, even the slow lane scares me, so I'm just gonna stay at home and watch the Weather Channel. Do you know the Weather Channel is the number one most watched channel on TV now? My 12-year-old Myron isn't the one watching the Weather Channel. Who's watching the Weather Channel? Old people, right? And we don't really need to, because you're like, I know a storm's coming because my knee is just killing me right now. Like, you know it right there. God's already given you a barometer in your knee, but no, it's like watching it. Harry, it's raining. Look out. Let's not go outside. And the grasshopper is a poetic way of saying you make decisions. The grasshopper drags itself along. The older you get, the harder it is to make decisions. You go to the store to buy toothpaste, and there's 7,000 varieties. You're like, just forget it. I don't have enough teeth to worry about anymore. I'm not even buying toothpaste. It's too hard to even make decisions. Ah. And then he says desire fails. It's the Hebrew caper berry, literally. And the caper berry, 3,000 years ago, was considered to be an aphrodisiac. So Solomon, a man with 700 wives and 300 concubines, a man who obviously liked the ladies, says this: I can't see, I can't hear, I can't get out of bed, my shoulders are drooped, I'm missing most of my teeth, and then desire fails. I find that humorous. Apparently, I'm the only one. I find it very funny. Like, okay, then I don't like the ladies anymore. And then he just says, and one day the bottom drops out. Because man is going to his eternal home, and the mourners go about the streets before the silver cord is snapped, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher is shattered at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern, and the dust returns to the earth as it was, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, all is vanity. One day, the bottom drops out for every single person, and Solomon here says, we go back to our Creator. If you remember in chapter 3, Solomon was in his questioning phase, and he's like, who knows when you die if the spirit goes up or the spirit goes down? Who knows? Is there an afterlife? Is there anything after this? He's in the questioning phase in chapter 3. Chapter 12, he says, no, you go back to God. And you kind of read this, and you have to ask the question, why is life this way? Why is there this slow, subtle decline that every single one of us will go through? Unless you die cataclysmically, but for most people, the majority of people, it's a slow decline. You can't see, you can't hear, teeth fall out, you got hurts and wounds, harder to make decisions, you start to know it, you start to slow down, you're afraid of things. Why did God design it this way? God could have had life like this. You live strong and brilliant until you hit 80 and then just your heart stops and you're done. But that's not the way it is. Why is it this slow decline? I think it's God giving you and me every chance in the world to repent. That is coming for you, Matt. One day this will be over. You can feel it. You can feel it in your shoulders and your knees and your ankles. You can feel it in your eyes and your ears. It's God's grace that aging works like this, to wake mankind up, to know one day you'll answer to your Creator. That's why God designed it this way. And so Solomon says, Verse 1 is the whole key. Listen, that's coming for you, son. And it doesn't get easier than right now to chase Jesus, because all this stuff is going to happen to you. It'll be hard to hear, harder to see, harder to think, harder to make decisions. You'll be afraid of everything. So do it now. Chase Jesus now. It does not get easier than now, son, because age is going to take you. That's point one. Point two, your sources matter. Verse 9. Besides being wise, the preacher also taught the people knowledge, weighing and studying and arranging many proverbs with great care. The preacher sought to find words of delight, and uprightly he wrote words of truth. The sources that you listen to matter. Solomon says, I'm the preacher. Here's what I did. I taught people knowledge. I weighed. I studied. I arranged things with great care. I wanted words of delight and words of truth. Good preachers know that there's information, and that's important, truth, and there's communication, words of delight. The way that you communicate is just as important as what you're trying to communicate. And so Solomon says, I studied, I applied myself, I gave every effort to make sure that I was doing a really good job at this. I was a good source of knowledge and information. C.H. Spurgeon put it like this. He said, you'll catch more flies with honey than vinegar. You can vinegar your sermon if you want to, but honey works better. So take time, take effort, care. And I would say today that there is so much information out there. Be very careful to who you are allowing to inform you, to give you words of truth and knowledge and delight. Because I'm amazed by something right now. I'm amazed. I dealt with an email just last week. How quickly somebody can become an American-hating anti-Semite. Like, it's amazing to me. There's so much of that out there right now. And people are just getting drawn into this, especially young men. It amazes me. And there's an easy way that I think you can evaluate your sources. And it's the end of this chapter. We'll get there. Wait for it. It's, does it push me into these two things? Because these are the most important things, Psalm will say. These are what actually matter. So be very, very choosy in the sources of information. Make sure it's somebody like this, wise. Not all over the place. People that realize if you make one little theological change right here, it's a bumper car in the Bible. Like, you can't just change one theology, because theology is all tied together. So if I change one of my ideas, it bumps every other theological idea with it. They all move together. So someone has to be very careful, study, and understand those things. Be careful of your sources. And then, no pain, no gain. The words of the wise are like goads and like nails firmly fixed are collected sayings. They are given by one shepherd, my son. Beware of anything beyond these, of making many books there is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh. No pain, no gain. We are a self-improvement society now. I want to be a high-value man. I want to be a high-value woman, whatever it is. So we have all these things to make ourselves high-value. Solomon says, wise words are like goads. We're probably not shepherds, so we don't know what a goad is. A goad was this long stick, and on the end was a spear and also a hook. It was a way to poke a sheep or hook a sheep with a sharp metal instrument to get that sheep or that cow or that donkey to do what you want. That's a goad. It's sharp, it pokes, it hurts. Solomon says, That's what wisdom should do to you. So if I'm never being poked, if I'm never being goaded, I'm probably not actually listening to wisdom. Wisdom should poke me at times. That's what it should do. Are we willing actually to poke people as well? Proverbs 27:6 says this, faithful are the wounds, the pokes, the goads of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. Paul says this, 2 Corinthians 2, verse 4. He said, after he'd written a very hard letter to them, he says, 2 Corinthians 2, verse 4, the proof of my love for you is that I told you hard things. If I didn't love you, if I'm just, it's all good, I don't really care what you do, that's not love. That's caring more about yourself and what people think of you than the betterment of them. Are we willing to goad people? Faithful are the wounds of a friend. And here's my simplest example. If you're talking to somebody and you notice their zipper is down, do you tell them? If it's your spouse, would you tell your spouse? No, of course I'd tell my spouse. Yeah, because you love them. How about just somebody else? How about me? Please tell me. Because the stakes are really high for me, right? If you ever see me freeze up for a second, it could be me thinking, uh-oh, whoops, wondering, and there's no way to check, right? So please tell me. I'll take that goad. Are we willing to tell people hard truths? I think we should be. Because the basics of our faith is this. Every single one of us is broken. We all need redemption. We all need renewal. We all need to be transformed. This is not, I'm okay, you're okay. This is, I'm not okay, and that's okay. Just don't stay that way. Let goads and let wisdom, let good preaching, let God's word continue to push us and the careful study of scripture move us and goad us into what God wants for us. That's what we're supposed to be. Yes, Sundays we're supposed to remember God's goodness and reflect on him, but also we should be goaded and poked and prodded. If God always agrees with me, it's not God, it's me. I'm just listening to my own voice. That we need a God that loves us so much that he'll confront us in love so that we become the kind of people that we want to be, that we'll love to be. That's the truth. Goaded. And if you look at life, what changed you? Was it the good, easy times? Or was it the hard, painful, goading, poking times? It's usually the goading, poking times that change us. So then Solomon says, 3,000 years ago, before the printing press, before the internet, he goes, of the making of books, there's no end. Back then, it took a year and about a year's salary to write a book. So it was just copying out. You'd have a scribe, you paid him about $50,000. Man, we've got so much more information. Now, I love books. I love learning. I went back to school when I was 40. I love that, but there's a limit to books. Can a book actually make you feel love? No. Can a book teach you to swim or to skydive or to drive a car or ride a motorcycle? Can a book be a friend to you, teach you about friendship or loyalty or forgiveness or forgiving? Can a book teach you the taste of honey, of a really good dark chocolate bar? No. So here's what Solomon has been saying throughout this entire book. He sprinkles it in. Chapter 2, verse 24. Chapter 3, verse 13. Chapter 5, verse 18. Chapter 9, verse 7. It's this: live life right now. We spend way too much time worrying about the future, regretting the past, or trying to be something else that we're not, instead of simply enjoying what we have right now: a good meal, friendships, laughter, our spouses, all given to us by God. So be grateful. Like, one of the most important to me disciplines is gratitude. It's every Monday morning, every one of us should wake up and our entire day should be gratefulness. I will not talk about, think about, do anything but gratefulness on Monday. I'm gonna launch my day, my week right. That's what Solomon is saying. Look out. We're all in this self-improvement thing. Enjoy, be, do what God has you right now. Enjoy the good things God has for you. And now here's the payoff. This is what he's trying to say the whole time. All 12.9 chapters. This is the end of the matter, verse 13. All has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. Payoff. Love God. Excuse me. Fear God and obey God. Fear God and obey God. What does fearing God mean? Thinking the right thoughts about God. His character, his nature, his awe, his wonder, who he is, his place in the universe, and where that makes me. That's what it is. The fear of God is all that together. The right understanding of who God is. When you have the right fear of God, it puts every other fear in its right place. Here's my best illustration of it. Let's say you and your spouse are driving in the car. You're having a very heated discussion. It's over something really, really important. And you're just going at it. It's finances, it's whatever, where'd all the money go? And you are just heated in this discussion and you are back and forth, back and forth. And then all of a sudden, as you're driving, an 18-wheeler is heading for you at 75 miles per hour and its brakes are out. What do you do in that moment? Do you keep the argument with your spouse? By the way, cancel the Amazon Prime account. No, you scream and get out of the way because something much more important just interfered with you. That's the fear of God. The fear of God should be the biggest thing in life. His position, what he is, who he is, awe and wonder of him. And when that fear is in its right spot, every other fear bows to that. I'm not afraid of people. I'm afraid of the future. I'm not afraid of anything anymore because I have the right fear that my heart is restless until it finds its rest in thee. Like things are put correctly when I have the true fear of God. And then keep his commandments. What does it mean to keep God's commandments, to obey God? So a couple years ago, I bet it was 10 now, I was up in Winston, Oregon. We went to Wildlife Safari, took the kids through, super fun. And as we were leaving, there's that, if you've been there, there's that building on the way out that has Noah's Ark on the side of it. And I'd never stopped at it. It was a Monday, so I kind of pulled in there and we were just kind of poking around, looking in the windows. When this lady opened the door, she came out, she was like, hey, you guys want to come in? We're not open, but we'll open up for you guys. I'm like, sure. So we went in there, kind of a neat little spot. And I'm talking to the lady and she goes, we have a life-size replica of the tabernacle in the Bible. I'm like, really? Yeah. Do you want to see it? Sure. So I go in the back, they have this warehouse and it's this massive room. And there is a life-size replica of the Old Testament tabernacle. Like it's got everything. So I'm poking her like, this is cool. So I said, so you must be a believer. She goes, yes, I am. I said, you believe in Jesus? I wasn't sure, are you, right? Yes, I believe in Jesus. Awesome. I said, you're up in Winston here. What's a good church to go to? And she said, well, I go to the church of commandment keepers. I said, oh. I said, what does that mean? She said, well, it means that we believe that we're to keep all the commands that God has given to us, that we're to wear a certain kind of clothing, that we're to keep the Sabbath day and keep it holy, that we're not to eat certain kinds of food. We're not to eat crab and shrimp and bats. I said, I have not eaten a bat. I've kept that command. And she said, well, how about you? I said, well, I am the pastor of a church down in Grants Pass of commandment breakers. That's what I am. She shut down right then. We are out. We meet on the wrong day. We have shrimp. We do everything wrong. Who's right? As a New Testament believer in the grace of Jesus Christ, are we to continue to keep the 613 Old Testament do's and don'ts? Or are we just supposed to keep the Ten Commandments? Who's right? I don't think you have to guess. Because Jesus was asked this exact question, Matthew 22. Listen to what he says. Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? And he said to him, this is Jesus speaking, quote, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets. Jesus just simplified it. Jesus says, listen, it's not about the 613. It's not about the 10. It's about obeying God by loving him and loving people. Because Jesus was dealing with a group of people that kept the 613 and they did not love people. You can keep all 613 of the Old Testament laws, dress a certain way, eat only certain kinds of food, do church only on Saturday. You can do all that and not love people. Do you know that? You can not do a single thing on the Sabbath day and be cruel to your neighbor. You can just checklist off everything and sabotage your work or your coworkers. Walk by people that are broken and wounded. You can do all the law and not have a heart for God. That's what the Sermon on the Mount is all about. You guys give and you pray and you fast, but you're doing it for the wrong reasons, and God could care less about it. In fact, they were using the law to get God to owe them something, leveraging the law. Now you owe us, now you have to do what we ask you to do. That's what the law often is. It becomes idolatry, paganism. God owes me now. Jesus says, real simple, love God, love people. Well, what does love look like? Let me give you two analogies that maybe will help you, help me understand what love is. The first is this. You know what a black hole is? These things out there somewhere that it's, I call it an event horizon, essentially. Nothing escapes from them. Not even light itself. The gravity is so powerful, it bends the very fabric of space and sucks everything into it. And when it sucks something into it, let's say you or I got into a black hole somehow, you know what it does to your body? It undoes creation. Molecularly, it actually crushes the electron into the very nucleus and smashes it. It undoes creation. Everything is just sucked into it. I think sometimes we can live life like a black hole. That everything is here about me. It's all to serve me. What does this do for me? How does she make me happy? How does he make me happy? That there is a way to live life that is a black hole. You pull everything into you. You're jealous of anybody else's good fortune. You can't rejoice with those that rejoice. You're always having to boast and make things all about you, how great I am. People need to make much of me. I have to insist on my own way. I get touchy. I get angry whenever everything that I want isn't done my way. And angry is a derivative emotion. Derived from something. So I always get angry because I want everything to be about me. And you're literally killing, crushing God's creation. That's what a black hole does. But there's another, I think, really good analogy in life. It's of the cell. The cell is the basis of anything that's alive. Trees, grass, humans, animals, algae, bacteria. Anything that's alive is a cell. But what is a cell constantly doing? It's trying to recreate itself. It's literally pushing out all that it has, mitosis, in order to push out and to make more life. Black holes undo creation. Cells recreate and make more because they're pushing out from themselves. It's not about me. It's about pushing out and making something else. I think that's what love is. Love is, how do I give myself away? John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but would have everlasting life. It gives. It's a sell. If you want to know what love is, just read 1 Corinthians 13. Love is patient. The number one thing that you have, especially as you get older, is what? Time. Patience is, I am giving you my most precious commodity. I'm not getting more of this, I'm getting less of this. I'm aging, I'm getting old, and I'm gonna take the most precious commodity that I have, the thing that I cannot create more of. I might be able to create more wealth, I might be able to create more stuff, but I cannot create more time, and I'm gonna be patient with you. I'm gonna take time with you. It's not gonna be about me getting more and making you come to my time. I'll give my time to you. It's kind. It rejoices in the truth. It bears all things. It hopes all things. It endures all things. Even when somebody is a black hole, you're still praying and hoping that they change and stop being that. I know they're always just sucking stuff in, but you know what? I have hope for them. I'll bear them. And when I make my life about myself, there's nothing more miserable than doing that. Do you know that? When I want the universe to revolve around Matt Heverly, when I think everything should serve me, there's nothing more miserable. When I think my wife and my kids are there to serve me, I will make myself miserable. It's the most miserable way to live. When you're the opposite. I'm the biggest enemy. Matt Heverly is the biggest enemy to his own joy when I make it about me. But instead, when I say, I wanna be someone that loves God and loves people. I wanna give myself away. And you find life. That's where life is. Life is literally a cell. So I always have to come back, Lord, am I being a black hole right now? Or am I being a cell? If you ever read, and I hope you do, read 1 Corinthians 13. Talk about being goaded. You'll be goaded by that chapter because no one can do everything in there. And our hope is only this, that Jesus Christ on the cross broke the black hole that is every single human being. We're all black holes. From Genesis 3 on, all of us want to consume more and more and more. It's the first half of the entire book of Ecclesiastes. How can I consume more? More women, more stuff, more. And Solomon was miserable. Only Jesus Christ breaks that. And he says in John 15, he says, listen, the Father has loved me. I have loved you. Now you love people. That when you get in this flow of the love of God, what happens is I don't have to manufacture this love. I'm being transformed because I'm a cell in his body now. I'm part of his body now. And what happens is I'm now loved, and that enables me to love. And that's the goal. The end of the matter, fear God, obey, love him, and love people. It's why we go to the table every Sunday. It's fill us, empower us to be the kind of people that we actually want to be, to go out, not being black holes, but being cells that love because we're part of your body.